welcome to Inside Commodity Futures Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner. I'm a broker here at Daniels Trading, author of Turner's Take Newsletter, and you can find me at turnerstake.com or turnerstakeag.com. It has been, hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. It was a pretty light week last week, and I was down in Memphis visiting my in-laws. Nice weather down there, and here we are back in Chicago, where it's a little bit colder, and story of the day is crude oil. Crude oil up big, about 10% last I checked. Let's take a look here. We're about after the traditional closing times here. Crude up over $4. OPEC basically said they have finally reached an agreement on how much they're going to cut, and everyone's going to participate, and that news came out early in the overnight. Crude went up, let's say January crude, the WTI. We had settled at 45 and a quarter pretty much the day before. We're going to finish up somewhere around 49 and a quarter, so a little bit over $4 when it's all said and done. Had some great questions today asking about circuit breakers in crude. A lot of people thought it might be 10%, which I think it should be, but it's not. It's actually $10, which made a lot of more sense with crude when we were trading in the hundreds, having a $10 circuit breaker. I don't know how much sense it makes when we're at 45. The fact that we limit up, limit down could be 10 up and 10 down. But that's the way it is, and I doubt the exchange is going to change the rules anytime soon. Gasoline is up 10 cents. Heating oil's up 9 cents. So big moves today in the energy market. What was interesting, too, not only did the OPEC nations agree on making production freezes and cuts, Russia said they would do it, too. And, you know, Saudi Arabia, who seems to be leading this whole deal, thinks that maybe they can get some other non-OPEC producers to also join in. I don't think, you know, a lot of countries that have free market economies, like the United States and Canada and some others, you know, they will not be part of that. But, you know, there are OPEC countries that aren't so much into the free markets, and, you know, they certainly can join in too. So it will be interesting to see if we get over 50 when we do. If you look at the charts in the front months, 53 is a big, big resistance point. Will we get there? I think if we do get to 53, you know, the market will be buying into this OPEC story, and then really what's going to push it over 53 is if the numbers are believable. Like, do they really think the barrels per day will be cut by all those countries? Let's take a look into what's the monitoring system. I mean, is this the honor system? Because if we're going by the honor system, no one's really going to believe it, and, you know, what's to prevent, you know, one of the countries producing X amount of barrels of crude oil when they're supposed to be only doing Y. So that's another thing to pay attention to. And, you know, if the market believes it, I think we'll break through 53 and go to 60. If the market doesn't believe it and just says, okay, the deal's in place, you say you're doing this, let's see what happens. I think it starts in January when they can actually start doing these cuts. I can see a situation where we get up to 53, and until you actually see in January the production coming down and having a legitimate monitoring group saying there, you know, we might not be able to break through the old high. So let's see how that goes, and if it actually comes down to it where, you know, this is all talk and where it kind of falls apart after a month or two, you know, there's no reason why we won't come back down into the 40s again. So it's going to be a little bit challenging to trade, probably looking for the momentum traders to get in. Right now the momentum's higher. Big volume today in crude. I think the January contract had over a million traded, which is big for just a single contract in crude oil in one single day. I don't think I've seen that in a while. So that'll be a story I'll be keeping an eye on. Something else that we've been watching a lot in the energies is natural gas. We wanted to get long on that, I think, in the last podcast. Some people did it on their own. That's fantastic. The newsletter, my newsletter ever did, I was in and out of the office, and when I was out, we kind of bumped up there. So, oh well, if we get up to the 350s, 360s, we'll probably be looking to sell it. If you are long natural gas, from when we were talking about 2 weeks ago, now is probably the time to maybe think about lightening up. I mean, with crude up this much and natural gas not reacting a whole lot, even on good volume, maybe it's time to look the other way. I know some people that we work with were looking at selling call spreads and put spreads, you know, the credit spreads and those options, you know, because natural gas did come up pretty big. And if you look at what's going on since October, it's been quite volatile. So there's a lot of volatility in those options, yet there really isn't a whole lot of reason to think right now that we'd go above, let's say, you know, the 360s, maybe 370 in January, nor below 280. So I've seen a lot of option plays playing both sides of that. I thought those are pretty interesting. If you have any questions about that or how we do them, you can always email me at cturner@danielstrading.com. You can go to my website, turnerstake.com, and find my contact information there. And all our contact information is also in the show notes here on iTunes. And we can talk about that. Or you can subscribe to the newsletter, because I'm sure we'll be talking about Turner's Take relatively soon. One thing that I think we'll be talking about probably today or tomorrow is the Kansas City versus Chicago wheat spread. So this is something that we've talked about now for quite some time on how, you know, Kansas City wheat was trading at a discount to Chicago. And right now, if you look at the July contracts, are about even, you know, which would be new crop, July new crop. So Kansas City wheat, the hard red winter wheat in July is trading about even with Chicago, which is the soft red winter wheat. The difference between the two is a protein level. That's really all it is. The Kansas City wheat, the hard red wheat, higher protein. Chicago, the soft red wheat, lower protein. What does that mean? People pay higher amount, you know, for the higher protein level, usually deserves a premium in pricing during a normal market with regular supply and demand in both contracts. And that premium would be anywhere between 30 or 60 cents, meaning that Kansas City wheat would be trading anywhere between 30 and 60 cents over Chicago. And right now we're about even. Why is that? Well, over the past couple of years, year or two, what we've had is a situation where the deliverable quality of Chicago wheat was not so great. We had a lot of it in terms of bushels. You looked at the USDA spreadsheets. Wow, you're like, wow, that is just an immense amount of wheat we have. Yet, for the delivery quality wheat, where it had to be a higher quality of wheat, really didn't have it in there for the Chicago. And what that did is it brought the Chicago wheat futures contract, which is based on deliverable grain, higher. And it brought in the Kansas City wheat, which we had a big crop, and also a lot of deliverable high-quality wheat. It brought that down because the supplies were higher. Now that we have this new crop that, you know, was harvested in July and August, and we're looking at the supply and demand and what we're expecting for next year, I'm thinking that spread goes back out to the normal historical range, 25 to 30 cents over, let's just call it, to be conservative. So the reason why I think that is, you know, we are seeing more of the Chicago wheat being deliverable grade, and not, you know, we are making up the deficits from last year. And when we get next year's harvest, which is represented by July, I think that market will be back to normal supply and demand in terms of deliverable quantities. And for Kansas City, it's actually, you know, where that wheat is grown throughout the Midwest, it's looking a little dry. So we can even see a little bit of an opposite, maybe a little bit of a shortage of quality, you know, when that new crop comes in. You know, it's very early, but anyways, that's why I think, you know, between the volatility we might see in Kansas City, plus getting back to normal in the Chicago over the course of time, we are thinking that we will get back to 30 cents. Again, if you have any questions about how we do that or how we play it, margins, risk levels, stuff like that, feel free to call in or email, especially if you have an account here at Daniel's Trading. So that is something that we'll be looking into and we'll be following in. It's going to be in the newsletter soon. Keep your eye on that. It's more of a longer-term trade. I mean, we're in November, going to be in December of 2016. That trade can be held all the way till June of 2017. So that is something you're interested in. Or if you're just a producer, you know, when you're a farmer out there and have a vested interest in how these wheat contracts move, you know, that's something we'll be looking at between now and next June. Another interesting development that happened in the grain market, the USDA came out with their baseline projections. Now, it kind of snuck up on the trade, Probably because there have been a lot of other things going on, you know, in the markets. I mean, it's no secret that there's been some serious volatility lately. But, you know, the USDA does their early baseline balance sheets. It comes out right at the end of November, and they'll update it again early in the new year. And what they basically say is, you know, what are early projections for? What's the trend line yield going to be? How many acres are going to have? And we can start to figure out or build our models of prices for new crop. It's very actually... It's great for me because this time of year is when I'm starting to do our price forecasting or have been doing our price forecasting. It's nice to see what the USDA thinks because when we write our 2017 soybean and corn outlook probably this week, you know, which will be kind of our thoughts on not only where we'll be next year but where we think prices might end up, you know, might kind of range in the next couple of months, it helps to have that. Few very important numbers about the that report that just came out. They're looking at corn for next year in the United States to go from 94.5 million acres, which is what we had last year, down to 90, losing 4.5 million acres, meaning that we're going to not plant 4.5 million acres of corn that we planted last year, so 90 million. That's just planted. The harvest, it'll be pretty... That's true. The harvest will be closer to 82.5. We had a great... crop this year. I think the yields are going to probably be right around 74, 75 when it's all said and done. 174, 175 when all said and done. The corn yields. The trend line would be closer to 170 or 171. You know, the trend line yield probably from the USDA is going to be 170.8. So if you take that, the 82.5 million acres are expected to be harvested, not planted, but harvested. And then the yield, we're talking about a 14 billion bushel use the USDA production the USDA is projecting for next year. That's actually going to be less than what the total use is going to be. So we could see, just in a normal year, a draw in production. So if we have any real pickup in demand, or if we have any weather issues, that draw can get further. Unfortunately, new crop stocks for corn, or these old crop stocks for corn, are projected to be like 2.4, 2.5 billion, which is big. So even if you do have 100 million or 200 million draw in the crop for next year in corn on the stocks, you know, we're still going to be about 2.2 or 2.3 billion. So to get corn into the $4 range, we'll probably have to be below 2 billion, maybe like 1.8, 1.7. So we'll have to lose a couple of bushels on the yield. To get there, if we had a bad year next year for growing and lost a couple million acres, or let's say the yields went from 170 trend line to, you know, let's say 162 or 163, then all of a sudden you could talk about $5 corn. But that's what would have to happen right now for that. And I'll be writing a report on that, those different scenarios. For soybeans, a little bit more interesting. You know, corn, it's going to take a lot to work off that big supply, which is why I think the USDA is calling for that reduction in acres. Beans have a little bit more promise, I think. You know, we're going to go from 83.7, that was the acres last year, and the USDA is saying for next year, 85.5. So it's an increase of 1.8 million acres. I think that's a little light. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that eventually be 86 or 87. But for right now, we're going to follow the USDA. And they're also having their trend line yield. Now, granted, we had a perfect growing season for soybeans this year, and we had that 52 or and change yield. Trend line would be 48. So if we came back to normal, that'd be a 48 yield. So in that case, you get a production of about 4 billion. When all said and done, I do think that's going to be higher. Maybe, you know, add another million bushels. I mean, add another million acres. You know, maybe. But still, about around 4 billion. And then the usage for next year is going to be 4.1, about 4.1 billion. So they're also saying we're going to have a draw in ending stocks from year to year next year, about 100 million bushels. Which is significant because we're at about 480 right now, according to the USDA. You take off 100 or 380, but the thing is, like, you lose, you know, maybe a bushel or two off the yield. You know, all of a sudden we're under 200 million ending stocks for next year. So, and you know, 200 million ending stocks in a weather market, and you only got two places in the world that really produce soybeans: South America and the United States. That could be advantageous for bean prices. I think, you know, we're getting, and you can see that now. I mean, God, what does it take to get corn and wheat to rally these days? I mean, it is just depressing sometimes. Yet for soybeans, I mean, you sneeze the wrong way and we're up 20 cents. So it's just, you know, and I think that's just the reality. So I think you will see some more soybean acres. You'll definitely see less corn and wheat this year. What's going on in soybeans right now? We have strong demand, but, you know, USDA is factoring in strong demand. Tell you one thing to keep an eye on. In southern Brazil, it has been dry. There's, you know, and there is concern for a loss of production. So, you know, maybe Brazil doesn't have this record crop that they're talking about. There's still plenty of time. We haven't even gotten done with all of planting yet. So, I mean, we are early. But as we get into December and January, if we still continue to see dry conditions in South America, which is really just now in southern Brazil, but southern Brazil is a major producing spot. I mean, before the whole Mato Grosso came in, you know, southern Brazil was the place to be for producing soybeans. So that'll be interesting to see how that, and so, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the soybean rally, about how it's been all been money flow and strong U.S. export demand. But I got to think some of this is also because of the poor weather in southern Brazil. So that is our outlook right now for corn and beans. We will have some special reports coming out on that in the next week or two, geared towards farmers and marketing, but certainly information spectators can use also for what to look for over the next couple of weeks and months in the corn and soybean market. All right, so finally, there are just a couple things I want to touch on before we wrap this up. The stock market has been trading higher. Goldman Sachs has recently said that they think the policies of the new administration could, you know, be beneficial for most stock sectors out there. A lot of other analysts have been saying the same thing. However, there are some things coming up, and we've got that Fed meeting that is going to be in a week or two. We're going to talk about interest rates. I mean, everyone's expecting an interest rate hike. We'll see what happens. As far as Sunday night, keep this in mind. Italy will have their referendum vote. A yes means that they want to have constitutional amendments and really give the, you know, the government more centralized power to do what they want, which would be more of a move towards the Eurozone. And basically handing over power to more centralized, and that centralized power in Italy would basically transfer over into more parts of the European government. A no vote would actually kind of probably take things the opposite way, where Italy would want more independence from Europe, and that's why you're hearing that if Italy votes no, they could leave the Eurozone. That is not what they're voting on. This is not a Brexit vote necessarily, but a no vote could lead to something like that, because basically what they're saying is no to the constitutional amendment to give Italy more centralized power. The no vote isn't saying we're leaving Europe, but that, you know, that kind of sentiment may resonate. There's also thoughts about what a no vote would do to the banking system, because apparently, you know, the reason why they want this yes vote is to make more laws and create more money and short more banks. In order to do that, they kind of have to do basically what they're doing is they're giving some of their sovereign power away, you know, from Italy to Europe for the money, you know, to shore up the banks and the economy. And if the people don't want to do that, they might just say, you know what, you know, to heck with it, the political system as it is, and, you know, bailing out all these banks, we don't want to do it, you know. Then the no vote comes in. You know, that's part of it too. So there's a lot of moving parts there. But the main point is Sunday night, the results will come out. Right now, I think that we're thinking it's going to be a no vote. So the currency markets might be in flux. The stock markets might be in flux. Do not be too heavy in any kind of position where you have exposure to that. Heading into the weekend, you're better off just seeing how the markets open up Sunday night and trade accordingly. So give a quick rundown here. I'm going to look through my screen, see if there's anything we need left to talk about in the futures and commodity markets. Bonds have been taking it on a chin. You know, there's this big theme out there. You know, we're going to see, you know, the new administration is going to have more stimulus. It's going to be, you know, spending more, less austerity, and real interest rates are going to rise. So that's bad for bonds, and we're seeing the bond prices go up. We're seeing the interest rates, in theory, being projected to go higher. Energies we talked about. I mean, crude is going to be up about $4 at settlement today. Bad for the metals. I mean, if gold and silver, we're probably not going to react to this. You know, if the macro markets are thinking higher stocks, lower bonds, higher interest rates, more inflation. In terms of like real asset inflation, there's no reason to hold gold and silver as much. If it was real monetary inflation, then you would want to have gold. But if it's going to be more of an asset inflation, more of a productive inflation in terms of commodities and like stock market worth and stuff like that, then you're not going to see as much demand for gold and silver. So they'll probably continue to move lower. And in terms of the currencies, the dollar is strong. We'll see what happens with the Fed. Keep an eye on to see if they really raise interest rates. Finally, livestock market. You know, it looks like cattle up here, December cattle is about 110.70. We're about almost at 112 for the February cattle. We are going to hit some pretty big trend line support, or resistance, I should say, some pretty big trend line support. I mean, if you go look at a chart of February cattle, kind of due for a breather. This thing is overbought. We could go down to the 20-day moving average is at 107 and three quarters, yet we're at 112 right now. So we are over 4 points higher than the 20-day moving average. So we can easily come down a couple of points, not break through the trend line, the long-term trend line, and still be above the 20-day moving average and in a bull market. So just keep that in mind if you're trading cattle. That is it for me today. If you go ahead and visit us at turnerstake.com or turnerstakeag.com. You can also check out the show notes to find out my contact info. And also, feel free to email in any questions you might have. Are there certain markets you want to talk about, or you know, certain relationships, whether it be spreads, carry, technical analysis? Please, by all means, go ahead and ask those questions. It just gives us more material to talk about, and you know, as we have more of these podcasts, and it'd be greatly appreciated. So again, my name is Craig Turner. This is Inside Commodity Futures, and have a great week.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.